If you're ready to stand on the line, if you're ready to fight back and serve it to the criminals trying to enslave you and steal your wealth through monetary creation and exorbitant taxation, you're in the right place. Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
Today's guest is Charlie Hogwood of Ready Go Prep. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Mark. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Oh, absolutely. Always a pleasure to have you on. So what's new at Ready Go Prep?
Wow, we've got a lot of stuff going on right now. We have our video show is really cranking. We're doing that on the first and third Wednesdays of every month on AroundTheCabin.com at 8 p.m. And we're having a blast with that. We started out doing that few months back, and I was doing it myself and trying to do it into more of a class format. But now I brought on Rusty, my fearless sidekick, and it's more of a humor based but educational type of show where we talk about a lot of different things. We bring on some of the biggest guests in the industry and have a great time with that. We've got our consulting services are up on our websites. We've stopped keeping them as secret as they were, so everybody can see where they are up on ReadyGoPrep.com. And we do some stuff that nobody else does. We just finished a very large consulting project for an entire survival community, which is amazing. And I'm looking forward to being able to announce where that is, because if people are looking for a bug out location with other people like them, this is going to be it. Let's see, what else is going on? Classes doing well. We still travel a lot. And we've got a couple of shows that we're scheduled to do here real soon. April 24th, we're going to be out in Salt Lake City, Utah at PrepperCon, which is going to be a mix of Comic-Con and preppers and survival and all kinds of really neat stuff. And I believe they're even going to have some of the cast of The Walking Dead out there, and that's going to be really a lot of fun. And let's see, we're going to be out at the Mountain Preppers Expo out in Sevierville, Tennessee on May 16th, and Prepper Camp, that's coming up here this fall too. So we are busy as can be.
Very cool. You're not gathering any moss, are you?
No, there's no moss growing around here.
Now, is there any one thing that stands out on your radar right now as being a major threat?
A major threat? You mean like a threat to general survival daily?
Yeah, things that we need to be prepared for or thinking about or prepping for.
You know, I think that we still need to keep a very, very strong eye on the economy. It just came out today that they've lowered the growth forecast to zero for for our nation. And joblessness is still at its high and records in number of places. So I think that is really the biggest thing that we should be preparing for. Hurricane season is coming up. So now is the time to start setting some stuff aside, make sure we're ready for that, and we can talk about that later if you'd like to. Other than that, you know, there's so many things that we should be ready for. Just let's get that all-hazards approach, like we always say, and if you're ready for all the basic stuff, you'll be ready for all the bigger stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely, and they've been telling us that we're in a recovery for such a long time, and like you said, a lot of folks just aren't feeling it because they don't have jobs. And so what would be your number one tip for folks to start preparing for another economic downturn? Just tightening your belt and putting away a little whatever you're making, start putting some portion of that aside as a emergency fund?
Yeah, you know what? Here's what we're finding, and I'll answer your question by making an observation with all of the people that we meet and see in our industry. People are still very worried about a lot of stuff, but I believe that they're becoming numb to a lot of these things as well. And part of that problem that we're finding with them becoming numb to it is they're allowing their stocks to dwindle a little bit. They're allowing some of their guard to go down. And they're moving towards a little bit more of a do-without lifestyle. But I think some of them are using some of their supplies, but they're having a little trouble resorting their supplies, getting them back up, bringing their stocks back up to where they really need to be. So I would say for anybody that's doing it, don't let your guard down now. Stay on top of it. It's helped you through a lot of tough times. A lot of people don't realize how tough times are because we don't see that soup line like we used to see in those old 1920s and 30s types of photographs. We don't have that anymore, but we've got record numbers of people on some sort of an assistance program in the country, so it's hidden. But it is happening. So guard yourself, make wise financial choices, and just keep building your stocks and your skills every chance you get.
And talk a little bit more about your consulting services. What type of services are available through that?
I would say that one of the biggest things that that we do with our consulting services are really they are geared towards working together, not just as a small family, but as a community or as a organized group that you already have. And we've got a long list of consulting services on our website that you generally don't see anywhere else. And we do the general urban and wilderness survival, but you know, we're not doing as much of that as we were. We're still doing a lot of food security planning, bug out and bug in planning. That's a real big one right now. People are trying to figure out, what do they do first, bug out or bug in? So we help set that up. One of the bigger things that people are looking at is retreat selection and planning. And that's really where we go in and help you identify what exactly it is you're looking for. Where do you want to go? Do you want to go anywhere at all? And we help plan that entire thing. And if that's not something that you're looking for, we do a lot of shelter in place planning. And we talk about everything from how to store stuff, how to make it so that it's not taking up all the space in on your home and your property, and how to spread it out so you don't lose it all at one time. But boy, we've got everything from convoy planning to contingency plans, relocation assessment. If you're looking at buying a piece of property and you don't know if that's the one to do, we'll actually figure out what it is you're looking for and do a strategic relocation assessment. So getting off grid, let's see, I'm looking down the list of all the things we do now. It's such a long list. Group operations, of course, because that goes along with the book that we have, you know, our survival group handbook, how to work with others, how to plan, organize, and lead your survival group, whether it's just your family, your community, or a big constitutional organization. Hazard analysis. We do a big comprehensive multi-level hazard analysis that can be as small as just what your near disaster hazards are, or all the way up into regional and national and the trigger points associated with those. So, man, there are so many things. The list just goes on and on. So check it out at readygoprep.com on our consulting services page to get a better feel for it.
And a strategic relocation, is there one place that everybody needs to go, or is that answer going to be unique for each person?
That is going to be different for each person. And I've had countless people come up saying, I'm just headed for the hills. And listen, I've got friends and family in the hills, and nobody wants you there if you don't belong there. So, and I've also had people come up and say, where do I need to go? And I would say, well, what are you looking for? Do you want to be able to grow year-round food? Then your climate's going to be a thing. Do you need to be near where you work or where your family is? That might have a pull on where you're going to end up too. So I would say that it's very personal. And usually after talking to people, they can narrow the list down pretty good because climate, location, resources, all of those things are pretty easy to flesh out once you know what questions to ask. And we have an entire system that we've developed to help people iron that out. So, yeah, it's going to be very personal.
Now, let's say about the person that has a job in the city and you know, just going out to and living in the hills isn't really an option for them. What do you recommend for that person? Are they going to be better off getting a bug out location out in the woods, or are they going to be better off just trying to relocate to the suburbs to where they're maybe not right downtown anymore?
Well, here's the funny thing. And if you look at history, and this is where a lot of people, they don't take into consideration actual history. Different situations really have proven, you know, different needs. But if you want to look at Argentina or some of the collapse that, you know, they went through in South America, they found that people that ran out to the hills and ran out and got those rural properties, as the situation got worse, they weren't able to be protected. They were really fending for themselves, and their community was trying to work together to fend for themselves. Law enforcement, military that was trying to keep order, couldn't get out there. So in those cases, they found that an urban situation was actually the safer location, because they pulled all the military and law enforcement into the urban centers, and that kept things kind of moving. Now, will that be the same up here? You know, who knows? It really boils down to, what resources do you have, and are you able to move back and forth to that location to develop it, to practice on it, to, you know, to even get to it in a time of disaster? So it's such a personal decision based on where you live and the possibility of what could go wrong in your area. I mean, if you live right next to a nuclear plant, well, maybe you want to find somewhere a little further away upwind. But if you already lived in a pretty suburban or bedroom community, you're probably, you know, a little bit better off than being dead downtown. So that goes back to our hazard analysis. That multi-level hazard analysis that we talked about earlier is critical to all of these other decisions.
And Charlie, you literally wrote the book on mutual assistance groups, the Survival Group Handbook. Now, once you get a good group of people together, do you need to keep meeting on a regular basis?
Yeah, you really do. Any organization is going to operate better when they have regular meetings, because that's when all of your work is going to get done. You're going to be able to spread information. You're going to be able to make decisions. And by the way, the decision-making process that you employ is one of the make or break things that you have to do in a group. Otherwise, people will just start leaving and not showing up. It's very important that you pick the right people and you vet them before you allow them to just show up in your group. But you've got to meet to figure out those personalities. You've got to see if, you know, am I going to get along with this person? And sitting around at a restaurant in the back room and having a meeting, that's not always going to get it. You do need to have social portions of your group. You got to get out and do social activities. But the key to having a survival group or a mutual assistance group is to go camping, go canoeing, do things that get people out of their comfort zone. And that teaches them how to work together. It helps to really reveal your personality and other people's personality, so you know what to expect when things get a little bit tough. So don't cheat your people. That's what we always say. Do not cheat yourself or your people out of the opportunity to get together and pass that information on and learn how to work together and become the family that you're really going to need to become if you have to come together for survival.
Now, that's a good point to start developing those relationships now. Now, do you still run into lone wolves that think they're going to go and live in the state park by themselves?
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up. And we originally ran into a lot of that. And I think over time, the message has really started getting out that that's just not a solid plan. I mean, unless you're one of these mountain guys on TV, you know, who just really doesn't mind out there trapping and skinning animals and, you know, you're all set. And most of us are not. That's just not the case. It's just not practical. You can't stay awake for 24 hours a day. You can't take care of yourself if you could become incapacitated. There's just too many chores in daily life of survival. When you realize all the conveniences that we have today, I mean, if the power goes off, you're making all of your own power. You can only work by the light of day. You got to squeeze all that in there. It's just not a good lone wolf mentality. Now, a lot of people that we see that might be lone wolf might be individuals who are trying to link up with family or friends, and they might be lone wolf for a little while until they find them. But so it's always good to have individual skills. But lone wolf is just not the way to go, and people aren't even saying that anymore around us.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today.
What's the biggest source of conflict for survival groups?
Commitment. Commitment is really the biggest one. People all say they want to get together. They all say they want to do things. But then too much other stuff gets in the way. The kids have sports, so you can't make a meeting. Then, you know, you can't go camping, or the weather's bad, or it's too hot and you don't feel like it. Or one of the biggest, strangely, things that we see is, I already know all that stuff. I don't need to show up. I know how to shoot guns. I was in the Army like 37 years ago. I don't need to practice anything. If something goes wrong, I'll show up and we'll be fine. And that couldn't be further from the truth, because any team understands that to have effective team dynamics, you've got to work together. You've got to practice and you've got to train. And if nothing else, you've just got to be around each other to understand those personalities like we talked about a few minutes ago.
And it's probably easier to work out the problems that you have, the personality conflicts that you have between people in a low-stress environment like camping or canoeing or some situation like that, more so than a zombie apocalypse. Is that right?
Yeah, anytime you're around a very high-stress situation and everybody's already on edge, then add in what most people don't even think about, which is going to be, you've probably got, you know, friends or family that are injured or dying or dead. You've got, you know, the pressure of being chased from your own home and all of the psychological factors and difficulties that go along with that. And now you're all of a sudden just going to show up and start being able to figure this out in a very uncomfortable, austere type of an environment. That it just doesn't work that way. Things aren't going to get better. Things are going to get worse. I mean, I do hear people that say, I cannot wait for this to collapse, because then I can finally start doing things the way I want to do them. Well, that's fine and all, but that is just, we're watching too much of the Walking Dead, you know, which, by the way, they actually employ on that TV show psychologists and team dynamics people who set this up in such a way to make it as realistic as possible. So, and there's actually a college course on groups through the Walking Dead. So it's pretty interesting the way that happens, but it is not going to get any better as time goes on. It's going to get worse before it gets better, actually.
And we finally made it through winter. And, of course, we're down here in Florida, so we didn't get too much of the bad stuff.
Yeah, I didn't feel a thing.
We didn't really get a lot of what everybody else got around the country. But now for the folks that are in those areas, do you have any good spring garden tips for them?
Spring garden tips. You know, we do aeroponics, so we're kind of growing year-round. we don't have as much of that problem as everybody else, but I would say the most important thing you could do is start doing it now. Get it in the ground, start practicing, start exploring some other growing systems like aeroponics or aquaponics is a big deal in what we do, and it's pretty interesting. We're actually looking to get a system set up, but we just got too many other things going on for that. But don't just store some seeds and think that you're going to be, you know, Mr. Green Jeans when something happens. Get it going now, because the learning curve is extremely steep when it comes to growing your own food. I would say, you know, I know it's not gardening, but get a couple rabbits and, you know, get a good breeding pair of rabbits and just hang on to them as pets in case you need to start ramping up your protein production. I mean, all of those things are stuff even apartment dwellers can do, and I won't even phase the – nobody will even know you're doing it. But growing food is tough, and you're going to probably kill everything the first few times you do it. So have a backup to that backup.
Yeah, and everybody's area, they think everybody has this idea of what they're going to grow, and then when they do it, you know, there's a few things that grow good in your area, and then there's several other things that don't. So if you've never done it before, you really need to do it, because there's going to be things that your soil produces that won't produce everywhere, and you know, and then sometimes you're going to have good years and bad years for different crops, and you just never know what pestilence is going to get them, because, you know, some years we've had like bumper crops of tomatoes, and in other years we've had different two different types of pestilence that have killed them. We had those little red alphoids, I think they were called, and they wiped us out 1 year. And so you just never know, and it's always new challenges even after you get down the learning curve. But you know, hopefully you've got a couple of resilient things that are going to make it no matter what. You know, South Florida, one of the things that we can grow easily here is the Florida broadleaf mustard greens, which mm-hmm. I love. Being from Kentucky, you know, greens is with some ham hocks is that's a staple right there.
Especially so, some collard greens.
Yeah, and some,
you know,
and some,
we can get that going.
And cornbread. Yeah. And the good thing about the mustard greens is they cook a lot faster than collards, which, you know, if you're in a survival situation, it's good to not have to expend so much fuel resources to cook things. And and that's another great tip for that is for folks that are storing dried beans. If you'll put a tablespoon of baking soda in with your dried beans when you soak them, it'll cut your cook time on those things in about half. So
yeah, we do a lot of dry bean storage and Mylar, all the different kinds of beans. And there is a cold soak, there is the warm soak, all that, to get those things back up and running. But again, that's all about, you know, properly storing them too.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we use them in Mylar and put those O2 absorbers in there.
Yeah,
which is super simple. We do it all the time and teach people how to do that. So you're saving a massive amount of money if you're storing some enriched white rice and all the different flavors of dried beans. You can really keep yourself going very affordably for a long time, especially when that garden's not working out for you.
Yeah. Yep. And it was some kind of mite. I can't remember now what the thing was that wiped out my tomatoes, and I'm like getting stuck on it now. But it was some type of little red mite. And
well, you know, we've run into on our tomatoes. We've run into the caterpillars, the aphids. And on different plants, we had that white fly problem that rotates its way around down South Florida. So, and we try very hard not to use pesticides on our plants if we can help it. But sometimes it's just, no matter what you do, you know, you've got to go out there and dust them with some 7-Dust or something mm-hmm. just to get control. We don't have nearly the trouble with pests on our aeroponic systems as we did with the ground stuff. I mean, we still got tomatoes in the ground. And, you know, Courtney's got tomatoes. She put them into one of our tower gardens, and it loves it. But I told her, you got to take those out because it's taking over the whole thing. And she put them into some pot of dirt, you know, some really high quality, you know, commercial soil, and add some compost and stuff to it. And they're just not as happy in the ground, and they're more susceptible to bugs. So, you know, soilless growth is a great thing. We really push that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, it was red spider mites. That's what it was. And I think that neem oil is one of the few things that'll treat them, which is an organic treatment. But once they take in root, there's just, you're done. They just
don't neem oil is a great oil to put on stuff. What you got to watch out for is not to put it on on the bright parts of day, because it is an oil and it will end up, you know, burning your leaves on your plants. And put it on in the evening, you know, let it soak in, cover everything with it. And we have had some good success with that. And Nurse Amy will tell you all day long about neem oil. You know, she loves that stuff. They're growing apples in Florida.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, they've had success with apples. They've had success with coffee, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it's funny. Amy's got quite the green thumb. So
now, hurricane season's right around the corner. Is it too early to start prepping for that?
Not at all. Now's the time, because we're in spring. And even for those up north that don't get hurricanes, you're looking at tornado season. That's coming up. You know what happens every year with the tornadoes. So it's the same kind of planning. Make sure that you got your food, water, shelter all squared away, your security, your energy, your communication, your transportation, all of those important, you know, the eight areas of survival. It doesn't matter what time of year it is, but as hurricane season comes, that's going to mean more rainfall, more wind. So I would say start getting some tarps together get your rope, your cordage together, all those kind of things. Double check your water storage in case your water gets shut off for a while. And as you know, I was in the military for a lot of years, and I was deployed to a lot of hurricanes, and Hurricane Andrew being one of them. And it's just a shame when you see a family that didn't see it coming, wasn't paying any attention, and now they're standing in what used to be their house or in the front yard of the collapsed house. I mean, we were down there shooting monkeys out of kitchens that escaped from a lab down there when Hurricane Andrew happened.
Wow.
And, you know, it was just ridiculous how bad it can get and how fast it can go. On Saturday, we were doing nothing. On Sunday, the storm came and it leveled the place. So, and when I was about, I lived about an hour and a half north of Ground Zero for Hurricane Andrew. And our unit, we were in before the wind stopped blowing down there at Homestead. So just get your food and your water and your shelter stuff, your repair items together. I would recommend, you know, a lot of people don't think about it, get a few cans of Fix-A-Flat and store those. Because if a hurricane, keep that in your hurricane kit. You can have a special kit just for hurricane supplies. Because when hurricanes do strike, when trees come down, when rooftops blow off, there are nails sticking up everywhere. And everybody has flat tires. And you can, you know, you only get one spare for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So keep some Fix-A-Flat with you. Keep some tire plugs with you. You can get those down at the auto store. I would say definitely get some bug spray, because if it does happen, the mosquitoes are going to be out. Check your, of course, all the common stuff like your flashlight batteries, your small radios and things like that. Those are all real easy to put together into a little kit. And also I recommend getting, you know, setting aside a pair of good work gloves. Check your chainsaws, your fuels, all your maintenance supplies for your generator. It includes oil filters and oils and all that, because a lot of people don't realize that a simple, small 5,000-watt generator, you've got to, if you're running it for 24 hours, which you shouldn't based on your plan, you should only run it overnight, you got to change the oil on that thing every single day. And people will run those things for 1, 2, 3 weeks straight and just burn up the engines in them. And they're just not made for that kind of thing. These are, you know, small generators not made for that kind of work. So get your maintenance supplies together and get a can of spray paint. Depending on the color of your house, get a contrasting can of spray paint. If something does happen to your house, whether it's a tornado or a hurricane, you go outside and you can spray your insurance company on the front of the house and, you know, information like that. So that's something that a lot of people don't realize. A couple little tips.
Really good tips. Now, what about for the folks that are out on the West Coast right now? They've got such a bad drought that they may be looking at a really, really bad fire season this summer. What do they need to focus on? The bug out bag, I guess, because they need to be able to get out fast?
When it comes to bugging out, we had a great conversation with Bill from Bebo Outfitters the other night on our video show about bugging in or bugging out. That's what Bebo stands for. He had a great acronym. But I would say when it comes to bugging in or out, if you're ready to leave at any time to survive, you're also ready to stay at any time to survive. So always be ready to go first. That way you can pick up your stuff and go. If your primary plan is to bug in and then you have to leave, you know, you've got this great Wonder Mill, you know, and all this stuff. That stuff doesn't travel well in a backpack. So I would say be ready to leave first and then really focus on building your shelter in place plan with all your other equipment. And the people out west have done a pretty good job at this point of understanding the fire season. They keep all that vegetation cut away as much as possible. Try to keep it about 100 feet away from the home. Watch out. If you got trees that are tall near your home, the fire will do something called a ladder effect. It'll go up into the tops of trees and start crossing over from treetop to treetop. And it's kind of hard to put out once it gets up there, especially, you know, if you're just a resident trying with a garden hose. So keep all the vegetation cleared away from your house. Keep all those gas cans and all that stuff that you've got laying around out in the yard maybe. Get all that stuff sheltered and put away and be ready to evacuate, definitely. And your family contingency binder is going to be one of the biggest lifesavers ever. Put all of your important documentation in there. You can go on our website at readygoprep.com for a free listing and paperwork on how to do that. And if the house catches on fire, if you've got time or you know you're going to evacuate, grab that binder and take it with you. That your entire life will be in there. And you can put that stuff on a USB as well. Carry it around with you.
That's a really good idea, and probably a great idea to just have both.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. grab that information and go, because there's different types of bug out bags. A lot of people don't realize that they put this 80-pound bag together with all their primitive survival stuff, but yet it's a house fire. You're not going to live in the woods. So bug out bags can be very mission specific, if you will. So you're not going to want to take that kind of bug out bag if just your house catches on fire, because you're not going to be living out in the woods for very long. You're actually going to be moving to another shelter location or a friend's or family's home. And then you're going to need all that documentation to get your life back in order, with all those insurance policies and licenses and birth certificates, passports, all that stuff.
Really, really good tips, Charlie. Now, where do folks go to buy your book? And then also remind us one more time, where and when is your show?
You can check out our book. It's called The Survival Group Handbook. There is another version of it called MAGS, The People Part of Prepping. They are both on Amazon. Just type in Survival Group Handbook in there, and it'll take you straight to the page for that. If you've already got it, we appreciate it tremendously. Leave us a great review. If not, let me know why. And it's also on Kindle. So for those of you that are really into electronic reading, and it's on the Kindle program. You buy the book, you also get the Kindle at a discount. So Amazon.com has all that. You can order the book off of our website at ReadyGoPrep.com. And if you're so inclined, I'd be happy to send you a signed copy. And we also have DVDs for the book. We have a companion DVD where I actually break down and narrate some of the key concepts within a book. And people seem to really enjoy that. So that's on our website at ReadyGoPrep.com and our Facebook page. If you just Google ReadyGoPrep, you'll find us all over the place. And our video show is on a website called AroundTheCabin.com. And that is every first and third Wednesdays at 8 p.m. It's a live video cast, and then they also archive it so you can podcast and listen to it later on. And we get on there and have it's a lot of fun. It's not serious, but we do talk about serious topics. So check us out on that. You can go there now and you can check out our archives and see what we've been doing lately.
Charlie, thanks so much for making time to come back on the show.
I'm very happy to. You know, you can call on me anytime. Love to help. And anybody's got any questions, reach out to me, info@readygoprep.com. I'd love to talk to you.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A globalist conspiracy transpires by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.